You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow, and for the rest of the hour, of all the Earth's land area, only 7% is tropical rainforest, but 50% of all plant and animal species call the rainforest home. That's why conservationists are so alarmed by the rapid rate of rainforest deforestation. According to a recent study of the Amazon rainforest, nearly 5 million acres are lost each year. Yeah, no matter how many times you talk about the loss of priceless rainforest acreage, it doesn't seem that any real progress is being made to slow down or reverse the trend. Why is that? My next guests think that they have found a way to save the rainforest by making conservation just as lucrative as logging or agriculture. They call it bioprospecting for conservation. They're scouring the rainforest in Panama, for example, for compounds that may one day become new drugs. But instead of taking the drug discovery and development process to the lab in the U.S., in other words, instead of taking it out of Panama, they're keeping the jobs there and demonstrating sustainable prospecting practices. Researchers report on this pilot project in the October issue of the Ecological Society of America. The journal is called Frontiers in Ecology and Environment. It's the name of the article in the Ecological Society of America journal. And they are here to talk with us today. And if you'd like to join our conversation, number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. And if you want more information, you can always surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. Well, let me introduce my guests. Phyllis Coley is a professor of biology at the University of Utah in Salt Lake City. And Tom Kursar is an associate professor of biology at the University of Utah. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Ira. Thanks for having us.
Hello, Ira. Thanks for having us.
Now, what are you proposing different here? Because I went through this litany of things that just haven't worked in the past. What are you proposing? People wring their hands and say, "There's nothing we can do about it." What are you doing differently?
Well, I think sort of bioprospecting has had a kind of checkered history, and we're hoping that ours is going to be the new step. But originally, pharmaceutical companies and scientists just went wherever they wanted and collected whatever they wanted, and so no benefits ever returned to the source country. Mm-hmm. But this changed in 1992 when the Convention on Biological Diversity in Rio was proposed, and that says that countries actually have rights to their biodiversity and should share in any benefits. So now companies do offer royalties to the source country if a drug makes it to market, and this, of course, is a big improvement. But it has still been criticized as being sort of an ineffective conservation tool. And this has been criticized because the chances that a given plant extract is actually going to become a drug and generate royalties, it's practically zero. It's like winning the jackpot. You can't count on it. And even if you are lucky enough, the time frame is 5 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. So what we were trying to do was come up with a way that guarantees immediate jobs right now in the source countries based on their biodiversity, such that they would have a motivation to save it. And perhaps we can create more jobs than through cattle ranching or logging. And I think one of the main points we really want to emphasize is that royalties are not sufficient to inspire conservation. The countries need to see benefits right away. And one way we thought of doing this is actually establishing the drug discovery research in the source country, as you said. Mm-hmm. And I think this is practical because about $40 billion is spent annually by drug companies alone and more by governments and nonprofits. So if just a small fraction of this investment could support research in developing nations, it could make a big difference.
And so are you running a pilot program in Panama? Is that what is happening?
Yes, Ira, that was basically our idea, was to develop a program in Panama to do exactly this, to have the researchers in Panama working in Panamanian labs actually carry out all of this research. And we started with this simply as an idea and a concept with no funding, and about 11 years ago, actually the same year as the Convention on Biological Diversity. And we built it up to now we have a five-year NIH grant, which is just ending, and a lot of results that are coming out from this program. And basically we're at the stage that we're convinced that this approach really does work.
And I understand that you established 6 labs in Panama, and you trained and employed the local citizens. So this is how you keep the industry going.
Yeah, we've established bioassays for 3 cancer cell lines, HIV, agricultural pests, and 3 really important tropical diseases, malaria, leishmaniasis, and Chagas disease. And in addition, we have 2 chemical labs that are in charge of purifying whatever compounds seem to be effective in the bioassays. Mm-hmm. And then we have a lot of outreach and conservation things. But one of the things that's been so wonderful is that in Panama there hasn't been that much opportunity for people to do research. And so this has provided both the senior scientists, the sort of some of the infrastructure and funding to do it, and lots and lots of options for students to get involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should emphasize that our background really is in plant ecology, and so that's what our expertise and our own research is in. And so I really want to emphasize that the research is being carried out by cell biologists and chemists. Again, they are Panamanian and Panamanian labs. It's not our research. It's theirs.
Have you been able to get drug companies interested in being partners on this, or is it still now in its seed money stage?
Most of our funding has come through the National Institutes of Health and National Science Foundation and USDA, but we do have a collaboration with Novartis and more recently with Dow AgroSciences. And, I mean, our goal is that once as these labs are producing more results that are, of really high quality, which they are now, in publishing in international journals, that this will be, autocatalytic, I guess, and grow.
When will you ever see the results of being fewer trees or forests being cut down?
Well, actually, we're surprised. The project's only been up and running for 5 years, and we're already seeing some difference. I think we're hoping to have a stronger and stronger voice in conservation and planning policies within Panama, but already it's making a difference having voices from within, basically, at the conservation table. So we recently helped the government of Panama submit an application to make this huge, spectacular, diverse area of Pacific coastline, terrestrial and marine, to make it a World Heritage Site, which would afford it much more protection than it has right now. It's quite vulnerable to development right now. So the government accepted our expertise in this line and to some extent are pushing. And so I think more and more we're going to see ourselves making impacts like that, not necessarily contributing dollars, but contributing the expertise. And because there are Panamanians arguing for conservation now, I mean, there always were, but a new voice, the bioprospectors are added to this call for conservation. So it's actually been very encouraging.
Yeah, actually, initially we weren't certain that there would be a direct link between bioprospecting and conservation, so this was an experiment. But now, having done that, once you think about it, it's sort of a no-brainer, because there are Panamanian scientists, they're working in Panama in their own labs, they're studying their own biodiversity, they're finding interesting compounds, and then, of course, they're interested in conserving the forest. It's very popular with the citizens, with the government, and in academia. And so all of this really does provide a direct link to conservation. And having done this, I think it's if you can establish those labs and make them productive, the link with conservation is almost a no-brainer.
Did you have to develop your own bioprospecting methods of finding these compounds?
Yeah, actually, because, again, the we is our collaborators in Panama, in particular, Eduardo Ortega was involved in coming up with several new bioassays that are simpler to do in developing nations. And one that's particularly critical is the malaria bioassay. And malaria kills a person every 20 seconds. It's one of the worst killers in the world. And yet, up until now, the only place people could run the malaria bioassay were in developed nations, because it involves radioactive reagents. And in developing nations, there's no way to dispose of that. And so what our colleagues did was develop a method that is cheaper, just as effective, and doesn't involve radioactivity. And so we've already hosted scientists from Madagascar to come over, and they learned the technique, and they're now carrying it out in Madagascar on their own plants. So the other tropical disease bioassays, too, have been developed to be much easier and cheaper to use in developing nations.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get a phone call or two. Let's go to Kathleen in Washington, D.C. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, how are you?
Here's a question. It's a little bit complex, so please give me a little bit of a moment for setup,
Okay.
Typically, I'm a applied biocultural anthropologist, by the way. And I'm also hearing you for some things that can and cannot be done in terms of indigenous and traditional knowledge in the United States, you know, like inner city stuff, would you believe? But one of the questions that usually comes up is, when people go to these various places, obviously there are elites that are there already who usually benefit much more so than just the sort of regular folks, you know. And they typically buy into the money stream, the revenue stream. So one of the questions, and then, you know, you get the cordoning off of this land that the people used to just sort of have, and so now they're barred from actually being on their own land. So one of the questions that I have is, what do you have in place, number one, for protection of an intellectual property of the people, the regular people, and what do you do in terms of the stratification issue of making sure that your bargains are not just made with the sort of elites and bring in sort of community people who are at the lower level?
Let me just jump in and remind everybody that you're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flato. And now we can get the answer to that question.
I think the initially, I'm getting some feedback here. Okay, that as far as indigenous people go, that's a difficult question and one that we haven't really worked with. We haven't tried to really work with indigenous people, and I think it would be a big advance if we could. The problem that I see is that they lack a formal political organization. So if you could sign an agreement with some indigenous people, but it's not really a country, and there's another group that's always outside of that. And until the day comes when they really have a formal, all-encompassing political organization, you're always subject to someone saying, well, you know, you signed with this one group but not with another. So we haven't done that. I think it would be worth doing, but the time isn't right yet. As far as elites go, I'll make one comment, and maybe Lissy will have more, but I guess it's hard for us to think of ourselves as elites. A lot of the students, there are 30 people that are pre-PhD that are working on this project, at least in Panama. They come from all walks of life. The University of Panama is free. We get people from all economic ranges, and so Panama is an open society, and I guess it's not an elite project in my view. Do you have any comments?
Yes, we had hoped actually to work with some indigenous groups and include them as part of this bioprospecting project, but because of previous experiences in other countries, with mostly, I would say, instigated by international groups, we were afraid to do that. But we did instead set up a shaman's apprentice program with one group. They kept all the information. We paid the older shamans to train some younger people who were previously not interested in this. And after 2 years, some of these students actually have their own patients, and it's being incorporated, all this sort of new medicinal knowledge is being incorporated into their program for ecotourism. Mm-hmm. But because of the problems with intellectual property, we weren't able to include them in our bioprospecting, and we were sorry about that.
Mm-hmm. I got less than a minute to go, but I wanted to know has it spilled over yet? Have you been able to leverage the other countries, maybe Costa Rica, other places, this program?
Well, we've been excited. The NIH was that funds us. The ICBG program was very excited by the success we had in Panama, and so they just did a second round of applications. And as part of the requirement for that, they wanted basically to follow the Panama model to include a lot more involvement by the host countries. In addition, I guess our long-term goals, our goals were just we want to set this up as a model, and we think we've done pretty well, and that this is something that could work in lots of other countries. And we would like to help by setting up some kind of consortium to provide both funding and expertise to these other developing nations that they can learn from our program and probably set stuff up in their own countries. Mm-hmm. And as I said, there are more and more governmental and non-governmental organizations interested in doing this. And once you establish some credibility, as we've done in Panama, then the pharmaceutical companies are actually interested in collaborating. Well, so I think there is this enormous potential. And I just want to say that the program in Panama is quite small. It's $600,000 a year. And if we replicated that at the 28 other biodiversity hotspots around the world, it's only $20 million.
All right.
And that's less than 1/100th of everything that's spent.
We know money figures and how cheap things are. Thank you very much for pointing that out, for joining us today. Phyllis Coley, Professor of Biology, University of Utah in Salt Lake, and Tom Kurser, Associate Professor of Biology at the University of Utah. They were talking with us from KUER in Salt Lake City. Thanks for both of you for joining us today. Our program is produced by Annette Heist and senior producer Karen Berghoff. Charles Berquist is our web producer and director. Our intern is Annalise Strachan. And we had help today from engineer Larry Holt in Salt Lake City. If you missed any questions or contacts or any kinds of, surf over to our website at Science Friday. You can leave us mail. We also have Science Friday's Kids Connection there. You can get free curricula that we make from Science Friday. Also, you can download the past editions of Science Friday on your Audible player, or listen to them in real audio on your computer. Have a great weekend. I'm Ira Flato in New York.